Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
So excited. I was excited for Meade. I've never cheered for him in my life.
Good Lord.
You really cheered for Meade?
No. I'm just saying I was excited for them in that.
It's a quiz bit.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're very welcome to the Racing Pod. It's Johnny Ward standing in for John Duggan. I did meet him in a fine establishment yesterday, along with some other great members of the media and so on and so forth. And he's in good form, but he did hand over the mantle today to yours truly. And Tom Bugsy Malone is going to join me very, very shortly. And this is actually episode 85 of the Racing Pod, if I can get my maths right. And it's Oaks weekend. And unlike the somewhat controversial Irish Derby card, which was very much handicap heavy on the Sunday, the Oaks is very much stakes class heavy tomorrow. It's a fantastic card. Very much coming around to the idea myself of Saturday racing in Ireland over Sunday racing. But we've good racing on Sunday as well at headquarters. I'm very, very sweet in one of the two-year-olds, actually. A second string for Aidan O'Brien. Top price with our sponsor, William Hill. So we'll get to that anon. And we'll be talking to Dave Kellner of William Hill later on in the show to discuss the big racing at the Curragh and also some cracking action at Haydock over the weekend. And we'll have a little bit of a chat about the week that was as well and the July Cup last week with Tom Bugsy Malone. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, not too bad, Johnny. Not too bad. Just dodging the showers here. So it's going to be the grass is growing and it'll be a little bit softer to going than we've had over the last couple of weeks, but no harm.
Absolutely, yeah. Do remember that in order for things to grow, it needs to rain. We've had a very good year, actually, in terms of the Irish weather. But the rain is welcome. It's welcome by racecourse as well, so that they don't have to artificially water. And just before we were coming on air, Tom, I asked you for, what should we talk about today? Because there hasn't been that much going on this week. And you got the trumpet out, and you said we nearly had a horse nearly place at a big price in the July Cup. So that's a good place to start last week.
Yeah, well, we're kind of the opinion that I did think a boil over was possible. And yeah, we just went for the wrong ride, didn't we? I went with the 100-1 shot of Henry Candy's, finished third. And no half measures, ended up doing the business for Richard Hughes, which I thought was magic. Hughes is one of my absolute favourite jockeys. He was brilliant. And as he admitted himself, he's probably a little naive when he took out his trainer's license. He assumed it would just be more of the same. You know, you ride these horses, I'm sure they'll just turn up in your yard every single day of the week. And it hasn't turned out like that. And as he mentioned himself afterwards, and I thought were brilliant post-race interviews, you know, it has been tough enough, and he very much backs himself. He goes to the sales every year. He buys 25 yearlings on spec, and then he has some sleepless nights before Christmas getting them sold. I can only imagine that level of stress, but he's come good with no half measures here, and she's really progressive sort. She won the race well, and yeah, just brilliant for Hughesy. And it's nice when you see someone do that, backing their own convictions, backing themselves. He literally put his money where his mouth was, and he ended up incorrect.
Yeah, Tom put up Run to Freedom at a big price, ran an absolute blinder. And my selection, Whistle Jacket, I don't know where they go with him. I just thought he was very disappointing. This was a race, Tom, where they went hard. Angus McNay's analysis in Racing TV was fascinating this week, just detailing the fractions they went. They went hard. There was a bit of a pace collapse. And essentially, Neil Callan had no half measures on the far side in the right place. And I'm not sure if it was maybe a result that'll have a massive bearing on the sprint division going forward. But it just doesn't look a very good sprint division at the moment, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And even you look back to Royal Ascot, sure, like the Japanese horse was a mile clear as well. You know, even though he was actually beaten that day, but like, yeah, it doesn't look great. And, you know, in a Sheeran, he's disappointed again. Whistle Jacket, where does he go next? You know, Ballydoyle imported Storm Boy and he's been shipped back as soon as he arrived after two disappointing runs. So it is intriguing where we go. We're kind of nearly going to have to look at the next generation. And obviously, you got the Sapphire Stakes this week at the Curragh with Gira there at the top of the market, who looks really nice and progressive, it's got to be said. But yeah, it's intriguing to see where what happens in that sprinting division over the next couple of months, because there's no blue point, there's no superstar in the ranks, at least in this side of the world anyway, it seems.
why in his lifetime has Aidan O'Brien trained so few very fast horses, like very, very, very few proper sprinters? He's had obviously any amount of Derby winners, the top stayers in the world, extremely good milers. He's had, you know, you think back to Mozart and the odd one down the years, but he's had very, very, very few sprinters. And it's not that he can't train sprinters. It's that they're, whatever the breeding shed is producing, it's not very good sprinters. From your perspective, being involved in racing, why is that?
I think you've nailed it there. I think it's what's arriving into the yard. It's the focus of the operation. I mean, sprinters kind of get labeled as cheap speed, and it's a kind of an ongoing discussion in the sort of bloodstock world. And Ballydoyle and Coolmore and all they stand for would be the absolute antithesis to that. So, yes, while he has had the likes of those horses you mentioned, and Known Ever is a very fast horse. Star Spangled Banner came into his care as well. Most of them there have been sort of outsiders. It doesn't feel like it's a sort of strategic direction for Coolmore and Ballydoyle, where they'd even be trying to find those super, super fast horses, even though they have had exceptionally quick 2-year-olds and horses that have, you know, done well over 6 furlongs at 3 and the like. But we've never seen a blue point or one of those kind of, you know, absolute speed balls. And it just doesn't seem like the horse that would end up through the gate. Invariably, a lot of these horses are less kind of fashionably bred, aren't they? Patash as well just comes to mind. You know, they're not bred along the same lines, because Ballydoyle do get a lot, or Coolmore have a lot of sprint fillies, but they use them to crossbreed with their the stout stallions. You know, the Galileo sprint mare cross is their go-to strategy. So they don't really want sprinters on the track, but they're happy to have them in the breeding sheds, you know. And there's so, when you look through these 2-year-olds now that are coming through, so many of the dams are really high class sprinters on the track, or mares who've got 5 and 6, 7 tops. And then you can just go send them to the, you know, St. Mark's Basilica, Galileo, Frankel, all those kind of stallions. And it produces a very, very classy 2-year-old or classy 3-year-old, a potential classic winner in time.
Lambourne's an interesting example out of Gossamer Wings, who's a very fast horse. Just before we do wrap up on last week, I felt the undercard is quite interesting as well. Saba Desert's victory over Italy in the Superlative Stakes, sort of the weaker of the two Godolphin horses in the market. The Racing Post actually had an article on this during the week, which was interesting, because betting is changing a lot now. There's so little liquidity early on, and then later on the market is responding to the off course stuff on the exchanges, I suppose. But it's, you can get good prices. You got 6-1 on Saba Desert, who, despite like badly rearing and leaving the stalls, I thought won pretty much fair and square in albeit a messy race.
Yeah, messy race. I mean, that really is a fascinating aspect of it, isn't it? The kind of early price, because when we previewed that race on what would have been Thursday, the market was completely the other direction with the two Godolphin horses. So, you know, it was very strange. I mean, you'd hope the winner can go on and be something decent. It's difficult to know where the kind of Godolphin 2-year-olds are at this stage of the year, whereas, because Aidan's had such success, you know, taking those three Ascot races and the like. And I suppose he'll back off a few now. We'll see a lot of good maiden winners come out over the next couple of weeks, and then it all sorts of kick on again from the start of September. But I wouldn't be surprised if Saba Desert's involved in some of those. I'd be amazed if actually Saba Desert isn't involved in some of those big 2-year-old races in a month's time.
Yeah, and I feel the runner-up won't be too bad as well. I spoke about this earlier on the week elsewhere, but I felt Matt Chapman's interviews with Aidan O'Brien were really, really interesting. And, you know, Matt Chapman has a unique style, I think, it's fair to say, of interviews. But Aidan O'Brien, you just got the feeling he wasn't confident about Whistle Jacket, and he didn't give you the impression he would have been amazed on the day if his horse were beaten in the Superlative Stakes. But, you know, it could be a case of lost nothing but the race and more to come from that horse. Anne-Marie Caulfield, the Chief Executive Officer of the Gambling Regulatory Authority, we spoke about her interview last week. Bugsy, you wanted to just give us a a couple of things on your wish list for the gambling regulatory authority. One thing before I go to you on this, because I felt it was, we haven't spoken to Anne-Marie, and Anne-Marie is a very good CV. It'll be interesting. Maybe if we get her on the show at some stage to talk about it. And I remember talking to James Brown about this, who arguably became extremely intransigent in terms of the gambling bill as time went on, which Conor Finlay spoke about in the Racing Post this week. He wasn't for turning, a bit like a particular individual back in the day, and maybe he had his reasons. But, you know, we're left with a bit of a mess now in terms of advertising on Racing TV and Sky Sports Racing throughout racing and so on and so forth. But one thing I would like to ask the gambling regulatory body is, would they look at, you know, the practices of bookmakers not laying bets to punters as well? Because it can't be one way. And we have had a swing in recent years where bookmakers are really, really taking a lot more responsibility on their customers and so on. But there's still, in my view, Bugsy, far too easy a practice of, you know, cutting down winners very quickly.
Yeah, and as I say, there's now sort of four steps to backing a winner in when you're having a bet on a horse, isn't there? You know, you, first of all, you define the price. You have to get on. That's a potential struggle in itself. Horse has to go and win, and then you actually have to go and get paid out, because, you know, they could hold your funds on a variety of tenuous issues, and it's sort of, now this is generally more of a UK problem than Ireland, but I mean, if it's done at HQ, it's invariably going to be transferred down the line. When you look at the Gambling Regulatory Authority of Ireland website, it is intriguing that their only concerns for punters seems to be for problem punters, and
which is a small percentage. I make this point over and over. It's a very small 3%. I believe 3% of punters, not 3% of people.
Absolutely, 3% of people. So therefore, 97% of punters are not really being facilitated, at least by the Gambling Regulatory Authority of Ireland website, whereby, you know, when you look at what's concerning people is gambling safety, about GRAI, how to safeguard your gambling harm, identifying gambling harm, pinpoint your triggers, problem gambling severity index, get help and protection tools. They're what's on offer. There's no, my bookmaker refuses to pay me out. My bookmaker refuses to accept a bet. My bookmaker refuses to accept the price it showed me for the horse I wanted to back. And that's surely a bigger problem for a far bigger majority of people who bet, even just recreationally. We're not talking about people who make a living from gambling, because that's a whole other kettle of fish. We're talking about people who just having an ordinary bet regularly enough. I doubt if you go to any race meeting on regular, you can find a person who can just get their bets on a regular basis. It's a scourge, and the punter does not feel like the punter has a friend, and the GRAI.ie website, when you go on there, it would not fill you with confidence that they have the punter on their side either. It's, again, reducing harm, which of course is an admirable charge. It's essential, as is anything. But if you had in any other industry, whereby if you were going into a pub and they just, you know, what, they just, here you go and buy your pint, it's €6. Well, no, it's actually €8. What?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you know, it's an absolutely ridiculous.
You'd be lucky at £8, by the way, now.
And get the same. Yeah,
you'd be lucky to get a point for £8.
I'm showing my rural streets here.
I'm outside a cafe this morning on the laptop, as you do modern life. Two punters passed me by. I never met them before. What do you fancy over the weekend? Got chatting to them. They're going to the dogs tonight, and they were lamenting, I think it's the start of the puppy derby, they were lamenting the loss of, you know, greyhound racing and all of that. And you could just tell they love the crack. They love having a bet. They love the point, like, and for the last sort of 20-25 years of my life, I've so many stories every day of just this constant pursuit of a winner, the pursuit of a coup, the pursuit of something. And we need to look on that aspect too as well, where there's an awful lot of fun to be had and lots of stories and lots of crack and lots of self-deprecating humour ultimately.
Yeah, and that is it. I mean, I feel like sometimes the story of going horse racing, and even the marketing of horse racing, is all about a day out. And it's just kind of, it's a very kind of boozy thing. But, you know, geez, the crack you have just having a few bets with a few mates and going on home. And then, you know, that's it. Because, you know, ultimately it's solving a puzzle. And that's where, and I don't know, for me or for you, you know, it's just maths. It's just maths, and it's a difference of opinion. It's like, this bookmaker thinks this horse is a 3-1 shot. I think it should be half that price. So come on, let's put our opinions to the test. And it's about, you know, proving that who's right. And like, that's like any argument in a pub. It's just, you can do it. You can do it on the track, and you can do it with make a few quid on it. It's, I don't know. You know, if you have an opinion on sport, it's nice to feel like, well, the ultimate test is you can put your hand in your pocket, you can back your opinion, and someone that thinks you're wrong, well, if you're wrong, they get paid. And if you're right, you get paid. Simple as that.
So many stories. I had a story recently where a guy got on to me. He placed a double on a horse into Waterford to win a League of Ireland game down the southeast, right? The horse drifts out to 9-2 from about 6-4, wins. And so he's waiting on Waterford. But before the Waterford game is over, the betting shop is closed because of time, whatever. So it's a late game. So he's playing with his son that evening. The son goes, God, I hope Waterford win. He goes, oh, so do I. I hope they do, because I have a double going into them. And he forgets, what to do with the docket? He's left the docket in the shop. It was a bet on one of the machines, right? So he's bet on the machine. He left, you know, the way you can get mitered. So he's had the bet, not taking the docket out of the machine. And I didn't even know, you know, I don't really bet in the machines, but this is a machine in the shop. Turns up the next day to collect his winnings, because Waterford win around about 1,800 quid. Somebody has taken his docket, right, and cashed out before the Waterford game, recognizing that the shop was going to close, cashed out. And this is kind of the end of the story, but you can imagine, you imagine the absolute dilemma. And because the betting shop can't really, they can't really tell your man what happened, but obviously somebody's taken his betting slip and cashed out in the docket. So the reason I tell that story is because I'm a punter. I also do a bit of work for bookmakers. I'm not biased on this at all. I know punters can get up to all sorts of kind of messing and all of that. And that's why bookmakers will tell you these stories. But it's a fascinating game where you've so much going on every day, even at a minor level.
Absolutely. You couldn't keep wise to it. I mean, like I said, I did work in the bookmaking industry for a good few years. And, you know, the strokes and scams people are trying to pull just in shops on a daily basis. You know, to be the slow count lads, or the squiggly dockets.
I used to have the guy that could fashion a tree to trap three looked exactly like trap five. He had two chances. And he'd come up and I'd be like, John, I know what you're doing here. And by the way, trap four won the race. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of part of that, like, it's part of that quest, like Del Boy in life. You want to get one over and have a bit of a laugh about it. But it's a great game. Ultimately, it's a great game. And the Gambling Regulatory Authority needs to realise that ultimately, for most, the vast majority of people, it's a lot of fun. Is it a lot of fun, Bugsy? And we're running out of time in the first half of the show. Is it a lot of fun to back a 1-4 favourite in the Oaks, as is one's want if you are having a bet on Mini Hawk in the Oaks tomorrow? The Judmont Irish Oaks, 3.40 at the Curra. We've only 7 runners, so no sneak each way bets. And we're looking at all you punters who like a sneak each way bet out there. She beat Whirl a neck on debut, at Epsom. That form has been boosted since. It's not the most inspiring renewal, but she just wins, does she?
Yeah, just wins, and it's just intriguing to see really what happens next at Mini Hawk, because, like, you know, Irish Oaks winners have gone on to run well in Arcs. You think of the like of an Able, Sea of Class, those, you know, brilliant horses over the years. You know, I think Mini Hawk's going to be another sort of Double Oaks winner, and it just won't be, there won't be much fanfare around it, but she's a very, very good horse, and she deserves to be 1-4, doesn't she? Like, you know, she's won her last three, she got beaten on debut. Aidan doesn't mind that. BMA, look, we might take the long way, you'd imagine, should finish second, but I'm struggling to find it's difficult to make a case for anything against Mini Hawk here, isn't it?
Okay, I'm quite sweet on one in the Railway Stakes, a race I really, really liked in a historical sense, the 235 the Curra. Recent winners include the likes of Henri Matisse, Siskin, the likes of Beckford, Go Bears Go. In fairness, I think it was a better race maybe some years ago in terms of the 2-year-olds that have come out of it. But Bugsy, just briefly here, because we're running out of time the first half of the show, True Love has been put in a very, very short price by Hills, and we'll speak to Dave Kellner, who they may have taken evasive action. 11-2 Puerto Rico. I love this as a second in. It's a 4-runner race, but this horse was very unlucky not to beat Learn to Discover the last time, and the way he was backed would suggest I have to have a cold taken on a filly over the 6 here at the prices, obviously because Wayne Lorden is right. Him, he's a much, much bigger price than the filly.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about True Love, and I remember I was working with the Irish Field.
Is this the horse
time,
or the philosophy?
Yeah, just going to have a philosophical.
We've only got 2 minutes left.
Yeah, well, look, We spoke to Chris Armstrong from Aidan O'Brien's before Royal Ascot, and he couldn't have been sweeter on True Love. They were astounded when he got beaten second time out. Just now, look, that form is obviously very, very good as well. You know, turned over by a subsequent Coventry winner. But look, True Love is very, very, very well thought of. I can see your argument. Look, Puerto Rico has just touched off last time out at the Curragh. Obviously got the Super Stallion involved there as well. He's by Wootton Bassett. She's by No Nay Never. But I struggle to look past True Love just because Ryan just gets it wrong so infrequently at the Curragh, doesn't he? When he has the pick of these, and you know, he was beaten on Puerto Rico last time out. But yeah, I just think I can see your logic, but Ryan's had a feel for both of them, and he sticks to True Love.
Okay, if you want to hear from Tom for his charity bet, which he's done very well on this year, we're going to have the second half of the show shortly. And if you're listening to the free version of the podcast, we're leaving you now. If you're looking for more, including our look at the Curragh and all the top British race on Saturday and the charity bet from Bugsy, go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe. Get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insights and stories from this week's action. In the second half of the pod, we're going to hear from Dave Kellner.